Good morning. On today's programme, undeterred by conflict, thousands of Indians turn up for jobs in Israel, and the graves of Irish soldiers who died in World War I, looked after by Palestinians in Gaza. But first to the United States, where the border crisis could have huge implications in this year's presidential election. Republicans are attacking President Joe Biden and his administration for failing to get the situation under control, while Democrats are accusing Republicans of using migrants to score political points. From southern Texas, AJ Mai reports.
Images and videos of migrant convoys heading to the U.S.-Mexico border have become commonplace over the past several years. Right-wing TV channels like Fox News or Newsmax are speaking of the impending danger of uncontrolled migration. And Republican lawmakers, including presidential frontrunner Donald Trump, are referring to the rising number of unlawful border crossings as an invasion. Immigration and border security have become a flashpoint in U.S. politics, as the country is hurtling toward November's presidential election. One city which has felt the increase in illegal immigration and the political theater associated with it is Eagle Pass, Texas. The small town and its Mexican sister city, Piedras Negras, are only separated by the Rio Grande River, which forms part of the nearly 2,000-mile-long border between the two countries. Under President Joe Biden, the number of apprehensions along the southwest border have reached record levels. U.S. Customs and Border Protection reported more than 2.4 million encounters with people trying to enter the country illegally during the past fiscal year. That was a new record and has strained the resources of federal, state, and local governments. Eagle Pass has experienced this firsthand. In December, over 4,000 migrants entered the country near the border town in a single day. Pictures of thousands of migrants waiting to be processed on the banks of the river, surrounded by razor wire, went around the world. This spike in unlawful border crossings has made Eagle Pass and its roughly 30,000 residents the epicenter of the immigration debate in the U.S. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has blamed President Biden and his administration for allowing migrants to come into the country unchecked. Last year, Abbott issued a disaster declaration, which allowed him to divert funds for the construction of more border wall and other measures to combat the issue. The standoff between Texas and the federal government over border security further intensified when Abbott sent the state's National Guard to Eagle Pass, where they set up barriers to keep migrants away. This includes miles of razor wire, as well as buoys and nets in the Rio Grande. But for some people in Eagle Pass, those measures are going too far. Jesse Fuentes, who is a member of the Eagle Pass Border Coalition and a small business owner, says human beings should not be treated that way. Fuentes says the river is a dangerous place, and installing razor wire on its banks and floating barriers in the water only makes it more dangerous. State officials are pushing back against those claims and say the measures have already proven effective, as the number of illegal border crossings have dropped. But the figure of illegal crossings across the country fell 50% in January, which is in line with historical trends. So the jury on the effectiveness is still out. Juanita Martinez, a lifelong Democrat and the current party chair from Maverick County, says it's not migrants who are invading Eagle Pass, it's Governor Abbott by sending hundreds, if not thousands, of law enforcement personnel to the area. And it's true. Small Eagle Pass is beaming with men and women in uniform. From Border Patrol to local law enforcement and even state troopers from other states like Florida or South Dakota. For local restaurants and hotels, the influx of law enforcement has been good for business. It's almost impossible to find a hotel room for less than $200 a night. And residents like Sandy Sassano are welcoming the law enforcement presence. She says the rise in migrants has made her concerned for her safety. Sassano, who's a Republican and supporter of Donald Trump, says she blames the current administration for not enforcing the laws. She believes that if Trump returns to the White House, he would change this and stop the flow of migrants. During his campaign, the former president promised to launch the biggest deportation operation in U.S. history, should he get reelected. Even if they sit on opposite political sides, the people of Eagle Pass are tired of being in the spotlight. They just want to go back to how it used to be. But without comprehensive immigration reform in Congress, that might be a far-fetched dream. For World Report, this is HJMI in Eagle Pass, Texas.
Next to India, where workers are heading to Israel, where many sectors of the economy, especially the construction industry, are experiencing labour shortages following the suspension of work permits for Palestinians after the October 7th attack.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government supports workers travelling to Israel despite opposition from trade unions who fear for their safety. Sajida Momin has more.
Even as the Israel-Hamas war in the Middle East enters its fifth month amid surging casualties and devastation, tens of thousands of job seekers are queuing up at recruitment centres across the cities in the world's most populous country, India, to fly to Israel, which is facing an acute shortage of workers. Israel wants Indian labour to replace an estimated 150,000 Palestinians from Gaza and West Bank who toiled in the construction and agricultural sectors. But after October 7, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government has barred the entry of Palestinians into Israel and cancelled their work permits on security grounds, sending the economy of the Jewish nation into a tailspin. The acute labour shortage, according to one estimate, is costing the Israel economy to the tune of $800 million a month, compelling Tel Aviv to import workers from India. Indian workers are more than willing to take some risks working in Israel because of joblessness in their own country. And what makes jobs in Israel even more lucrative for Indians is that they earn up to five times more in a year in Israel, where wages are substantially higher than at home. Although the Indian economy is growing and Prime Minister Narendra Modi is pulling out all stops to attract business and foreign investors, unemployment remains high and is naturally fueling the overseas migration of workers. According to the World Bank, nearly 18% of Indians between the age of 15 and 24 are jobless, driving the exodus of able-bodied men to foreign shores to earn their livelihood. Earlier governments in India were more pro-Palestine than pro-Israel, but Modi's government is openly pro-Israel. It is therefore facilitating the export of labour to Israel from India, although trade unions are vehemently opposing what they call the commodification and dehumanization of workers. Even a trade union aligned with Modi's ruling Bharatiya Janata Party is against sending Indian workers to Israel and has urged the government to immediately stop it. But all such calls are falling on deaf ears. Regardless of criticism and plans to approach the courts, the first batch of around 6,000 carpenters, iron workers, plasterers, painters, and tile fitters from India are expected to reach Israel in early March. Shay Posner, Deputy Director General of the Israel Builders Association, has been quoted in the media saying that 10,000 workers are being hired in India in the first phase, while the overall target for this year is over 60,000 workers. At this rate, India will soon become the biggest supplier of construction workers to Israel, although there are reports of Tel Aviv also negotiating with countries like China and Sri Lanka for importing manpower. Before October 7, Thailand, Nepal and the Philippines accounted for the bulk of expatriate workers in Israel, but they left for home after the killing of 80 to 100 foreign workers by Hamas. But an even bigger void was created by the banning of Palestinian workers since the war. Among the 150,000 Palestinian labourers, 66% were in the Israeli construction sector alone. Israeli construction firms are placing orders for workers from India with the Israeli Labour Agency, called the Population and Immigration Authority, which in turn liaises with the National Skills Development Corporation in India, which is under the Ministry of Skills Development and Entrepreneurship. The recruitment in India is being carried out by the National Skills Development Corporation of India, which works closely with the various state governments. In November, India's Ministry of Skill Development and Entrepreneurship signed a three-year agreement with the Israeli government called the Facilitation of Temporary Employment of Indian Workers in Specific Labour Markets in the State of Israel. The Hindu, one of India's leading English newspapers, reported that the recruitment process under the agreement was fast-tracked after Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu telephoned Modi on December 19 to expedite the dispatch of workers from India. Trade unions in India say that the workers headed for Israel do not enjoy the safeguards and protections that Indian labour going abroad is usually entitled to. Prominent trade union leaders are accusing the Modi government of caring two hoots about the safety and security of Indian workers in its tearing hurry to oblige Tel Aviv. There is also the larger question of Indian workers being seen as replacement for Palestinian workers, and India therefore not being viewed as a neutral country in the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. For World Report, I am Sajida Momin in India.
And finally, some 200,000 men from the island of Ireland served in the British military during the First World War. Around 35,000 lost their lives, many buried in Commonwealth cemeteries dotted around the world, including in Gaza. From Jerusalem, Hannah McCarthy reports.
On a flight to Cairo, an aid worker returning to Gaza showed me some photos on their phone of a carefully manicured green lawn with white headstones pitched in neat, orderly rows. Carved into the headstones are surnames like McNally and Kennedy and the names of regiments like the Connacht Rangers and the Royal Irish Fusiliers. The photos were taken months ago in the Commonwealth Cemetery in Deir al-Balah in southern Gaza, a city whose Arabic name translates as the Monastery of the Date Palm. It's one of two cemeteries that exist for soldiers who fought and died in Gaza for Britain during the two bloody world wars. The headstones in the cemeteries feature crosses for Christian soldiers, the Khanda for Sikhs, Stars of David for Jewish soldiers, and inscriptions of the Quran for fallen Muslim soldiers. In total, some 200,000 men from the island of Ireland served in the British military during the First World War. Around 35,000 lost their lives, many buried in Commonwealth cemeteries dotted around the world, including in Gaza. At the start of World War I, the Turkish Ottoman Empire wrapped around the coast of the Mediterranean from Constantinople, now Istanbul, through Beirut and Gaza, and for the first few months of the war into Egypt before she declared herself independent of Ottoman rule in December 1914. Ireland was herself making loud calls for independence and home rule as Britain announced that she would join World War I in 1914 against Germany, which allied with the Ottomans. British-controlled Ireland at the beginning of the 20th century offered few economic opportunities to its people, who experienced some of the worst slums and child mortality rates in Europe. Many working-class men in Dublin who lost their jobs in the 1913 lockout after demanding better conditions ended up joining the British Army to secure a reliable income. With members drawn from Ireland's four provinces and regiments including the Royal Munster Fusiliers and Royal Irish Rifles, the 10th Irish Division that was sent to the Middle East was described as neither unionist nor nationalist by the historian Stephen Sandford. The 10th Irish Division fought in Gallipoli in 1915, reportedly losing half of its men within 2 months, before moving to Salonika in Greece at the end of the year. As the division lost numbers to death, sickness and injury, it became less Irish, with replacements drawn from elsewhere in the United Kingdom. After Salonika, what was left of the 10th Irish Division moved to Egypt in 1917, and then on to Palestine, where it fought in the Third Battle of Gaza. In Gaza, the soldiers of the 10th Irish Division faced extreme heat, sandstorms and a lack of water, before joining in the capture of the holy city of Jerusalem. The Irish men who survived World War I in Palestine returned to an Ireland that would secure its independence from Britain just a few years later, after the partition of Northern Ireland. Meanwhile, the Palestine that Irish soldiers left behind faced a very different path. The territory was placed under the military control of Britain, then later divided with the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948, and occupied by varying Egyptian, Jordanian and Israeli forces until the present day. Despite Britain's role in obstructing Palestinian statehood, the Commonwealth cemeteries in Gaza are carefully tended to by local Palestinians. The Jarada family that maintains the gardens of the Commonwealth Cemetery near Gaza City was originally from Beersheba, where they looked after a Commonwealth cemetery there before fleeing in 1948 when the area became part of Israel. Ibrahim Jarada is the third generation of his family to tend to the Commonwealth Cemetery, and before the latest war between Israel and Hamas would take school children on tours of the cemetery, emphasising the importance of commemorating the lives of the dead. His family were forced to flee to the south of Gaza at the start of the current war. When I messaged him recently, he said that the only thing he was focusing on was the day-to-day survival of his family. While the two Commonwealth cemeteries remain largely untouched except for one rocket strike in October, the Israeli military has desecrated at least 16 other cemeteries during its ground offensive in Gaza, leaving gravestones ruined, soil upturned, and in some cases bodies unearthed. The Israeli military says that this was part of an effort to destroy Hamas command posts, but international law experts say that the intentional destruction of religious sites could amount to war crimes. Palestinians themselves say that nowhere is safe in Gaza, perhaps not even for the dead. For World Report, I'm Hannah McCarthy in Jerusalem.
That's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Elaine Devlin. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Sharon Lynch, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.